Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends. Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Thank goodness it's folk. Sheffield Live's weekly folk programme, broadcasting to the world. With Sam Hindley and James Fagan. Every Friday at 10 a.m.
That's Rachel Unthank and the Winterset from their second album, released in 2007, which was called The Bands. And that was a song by Belinda O'Hooley, who was a member of the band at the time, and is playing the piano on that track. And I'm playing that because my son Harry has been playing that riff over and over again in the house, and I can't get it out of my head. So there you go. Welcome to the second half of Thank Goodness It's Folk here on Friday the 27th of September. Thank you very much to Sam Hindley for the first half. I have a fantastic guest for you in this half, and I'm so glad you've stayed with us because you you're going to love it. McDarry Yates is his name. He's a singer from Dublin, and he is wonderful. His album is just out this last week. It's called Traditional Singing from Dublin, and it is brilliant. I love McDarry's voice. It's absolutely massive, and he sings with heart and enthusiasm and passion. With a strong eye on the traditional singers who have influenced him, but very much his own singer as well, a combination which I know you're going to find brilliant to listen to. We start with The Kerry Recruit, a song he learnt from a tape of the great Luke Kelly prior to his life in the Dubliners. He was a young singer plying his trade in London, and he sang this song in London famously to Ewan McColl and Peggy Seeger. McDarry sings it brilliantly. Have a listen to this and then join us for an interview with McDarry Yates about his new album, Traditional Singing from Dublin.
About 4 years ago I was digging the land with me brogues and me feet and me spade and me hand. And here says I to myself, what a pity to see such a fine strapping lad footing turf round Tralee. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring ya, and you're in ya. So I buttered me brogues and shook hands with me spade, and away down the road like a dashing young blade. When up comes a sergeant and he asked me to list, or a sergeant to grab, put the bob in me fist. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring ya, and you're in ya. Well, says he, here's a shilling, for I've got no more. When you get to headquarters, you'll get half a score. Or a quid your commean, said the sergeant, good boy. You'd not wish to be quartered, and neither would I. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring ya, and you're in ya. Well, the first thing they gave me, it was a red coat, with a fine strap of leather to go around me throat. And the next thing they gave me, I asked what was that, and they told me it was a cockade for me hat. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, and you're in ya. And the next thing they gave me, they called it a gun, with powder and ball and a place for me thumb. Well, first she spit fire, lads, and then it spewed smoke, and it gave me all shoulder such a hell of a stroke. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, and you're in ya. And the first place they sent me was down on the sea, all aboard of a warship bound for the Crimea. Three sticks in the middle, all rolled round with sheet. Och, she walked on the water without any feet. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, and you're in ya. And when that balaclava we landed quite sound, cold, wet and hungry we lay on the ground. And next morning for action the bugle did call, and we had a hot breakfast of powder and ball. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, and you're in ya. Faith, we fought at the Alma like wise Inkerman, and the Russians they wailed us down on the Redan. And in scaling the wall there meself lost an eye, and a big Russian bullet ran away with me tie. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, and you're in ya. And it's there that I lay stretched on the cold ground, while heads, legs and guts, and they were scattered all around. And I wish that me man, me cleavings were nigh, so they'd bury me decent and give a loud cry. With me touring in ya, with me touring in ya, with me touring ya, and you're in ya. And it's oft times I thought of me name and me home, and the days that I spent cutting turf off my vrone, with the bugle so loud and the bullet so hot, I laid down in the ditch, lads, for fear I'd be shot. With me touring, yeah. With me touring, yeah. With me touring, yeah. But they called for the doctor and he soon staunched the blood. And he gave me an elegant leg made of wood. Then they gave me a medal and 3 pence a day. So contented with Sheila, I live on half pay. With me touring, yeah. 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 With me touring, yeah.
Well, you've just heard a track, The Kerry Recruit, from the brand new album, and in fact the debut album, from my guest today, McDarrah Yates. The album is called Traditional Singing from Dublin, and it is very fresh. It just came out last week, and I have been looking forward to talking to McDarrah on the show for a long time. In fact, I've been planning to talk to you, McDarrah, since I met you in Whitby, I think, last year. It's been a busy year for you since then. And first of all, welcome to the program and congratulations on, I won't say finally, because I'll talk a bit to you about what I think about the timing of the album, but congratulations on Traditional Singing from Dublin and welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, James. And I think finally is the appropriate word. Long expectant comes at last. Believe me, I've been dragging my heels and knuckles on this for a long time. So it's great to be here talking about it and have it out in the world.
Absolutely. It's a very, very good collection of songs, which you know, because it's, as you say, it's been a long time coming. But what I wanted to say about the timing of it is that something that struck me from about you and your approach to music from the very beginning is that it's not necessarily something that does get rushed. It's not something that has a time scale. And a lot of the singers who have been your inspirations, there is a sense that, well, to quote one of your heroes, Liam Weldon, that the song is more important than the singer. Does that apply to the timing of your record at all, do you think? Or is it just that you haven't got it off the ground for a long time?
Yeah, I guess, to be perfectly honest with you, James, my true feeling about the recording of traditional music is that it is a social music and it's something that exists in a kind of live, living environment. Now,
yes,
maybe that sounds cliche. Maybe people believe that about all music, but I think it's particularly true of traditional music. And in some cases, it's better left off a record. You know, sometimes in some cases you can't really capture it in a studio environment. None of the same magic, in my opinion, at the very least. So I think when people do go to recorders, what often happens is they have to make, you know, very careful choices to make sure they're getting that spirit alive in the record. So in my case, it's not that I wanted to take my time, or I necessarily felt I was less important than the music, though I do feel that. it's mostly that I just wanted to make sure that these songs could be accurately represented, and it took me a couple of tries to feel like I'd done that, and I think I'm somewhere there now.
I think you certainly are, and we've actually got right into the meat of one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, which is how do you go about conveying that sense of a song which you are used to singing socially or communally or, you know, at the cobblestone or wherever it is that you are singing, or, you know, the teachers or wherever the club that you're singing. What is it like being in the strange isolation of a recording session trying to capture that?
Yeah, well, I guess I should tip my hat to the producer on the record. You might be aware of the Irish post-punk noise band called Gillaband, but their bass player, Daniel Fox, and indeed the rest of the band are some of my oldest friends. And Daniel just comes from a much more punk rock kind of ethos and background. And he kind of noticed in the studio that the first takes were always the best, and not necessarily that they were always the cleanest or they were always the clearest, just that there was an energy on them that just seemed to die away take after take. And he surmised that effectively I was in the pub on track one. I was in the pub corner. I was in the kitchen on track one. And then on track two, or take two and three and four, I was just singing about being there, if that makes any sense.
It does. It does indeed.
And I then began to hear what he was talking about, that it seemed that I could give it socks on take one, and there was a freshness and a kind of realness, and I was kind of going on the journey that the protagonist of the song was going on track on take one. And then from that point on, that kind of imagination seemed to fall away. So that was one part of it. But a lot of it had just to do with, you know, just doing my best to put myself in the kind of shoes of the protagonist of the song while I was there, and just not really not being too tied to perfection, because we're not that. No. In a live setting. We're not that, among other singers.
Absolutely.
And there's no reason we should be that in a studio either.
You talk about putting yourself in the shoes of the protagonist. Do you ever find yourself putting yourself in the shoes of the singer from whom you learned the song? And if so, how far should one take that? Or is it important to be able to get away from that, even though we revere and love our sources?
Yeah, well, I heard the great Shane Mock Tomas, he's a great historian from Dublin, he sadly passed away, but he once said, plagiarize everybody. Don't plagiarize one person. That's plagiarism. copy your heroes, you know, yeah. You know, take everything from them. It's unlikely that you're actually going to come out sounding like any of them. So yeah, I do, perhaps not to a ridiculous extent, but I do try to glean as much as humanly possible from the singers from whom I learned the songs. Yeah. I mean, in terms of putting myself in their shoes, I mean, I do think it's important. Very often when I'm singing a Liam Weldon song or a Dominic Bean song or a Luke Kelly song, I do often think it's important that some of the same spirit is retained.
Yes.
in what I'm doing. But the word spirit is kind of key there. I think we can get in a dangerous game by trying to, you know, do our ancestors proud, as it were, because, yeah, I don't know, people from different generations simply have different tastes, you know. However, if you can maintain the spirit of what they do, the aesthetics might be entirely different, you know, the feel of the song could be different. But if essentially you're communicating some of the same richness that existed in their version in yours, I think you're doing pretty well. And it's a very easy thing to lose,
yeah,
if you're not careful. But I do think a lot about those singers, whether or not I put myself in their shoes when I'm singing songs. I'm not entirely sure, but they're always there.
Well, it's a great response. One of the things that struck me about the Luke Kelly recording that you source it from is I actually believe you got it from a very interesting recording of him singing at the Critics Group to Ewan McColl and Peggy Seeger. Famously, Luke was a young singer in London at the time. Can you imagine being in the shoes of Luke Kelly being analysed like that? I mean, we've talked a bit about on the program before about some of the pros and cons of the Critics Group, but one of the good things about it, I think, was the attention to detail that was being paid in London at the time to source singers and to tradition. But imagine being Luke. Have you ever imagined what it must have been like for Luke in those days?
Yeah, I've read a bit about the time. I mean, he was very young. I think like 17 when he was out there. And I know he made a couple of trips back every now and then, and he seemed to keep up with Peggy and Ewan a lot. I wonder if he would have been so receptive to that kind of criticism when he was in his 20s and was touring with the Dubliners and it was, yeah, a bit more established. But it's clear that it made a massive impact on him. I mean, he continued singing Ewan songs all throughout his life. His attention to things like diction and regional accent were really prevalent, like all throughout his career. So, we can say all we want about the Critics Group, and I'm sure not everything they did was completely up to scratch, but they gave us Luke Kelly, so couldn't have been too bad.
Absolutely. One of the things that, like, looking back on the work that you've contributed already to traditional music in Ireland is that you are, see, it seems to me that you're as interested in the singers and the stories as singing them yourself, and a lot of the mm-hmm. video material of you is of you in my shoes right now. You're behind the mic and you're talking and you're listening to singers and talking to them. Do you see much separation between that process and actually being in the performer's role yourself?
Let me tell you something, James. I'm nothing but a big fan. I'm a big fanboy. That's all I really am here. I do sing as well. But honestly, I love traditional music with every inch of my bone. The people, the stories that are involved in it, the amazing humanity that comes along with it.
Yeah.
And if I can use any of my skills, be they filmmaking, sound recording, archiving, whatever it is, putting on shows, if I can use those to promote these incredible people and this incredible music, I will.
Yeah.
So I do run a sort of production company in small caps called Macdariot Presents, and I do put on shows and make films. But the only goal is traditional music. I'm promoting that to a wider audience. If I can do anything to service this great music, which has kind of made me as a person, I will. Just a big fanboy, James. That's all it is.
I love it, and I relate strongly to what you're saying. Being a fanboy, I had to go and visit the hallowed cobblestone when I was over at Christmas with Nancy. Unfortunately, it wasn't the singers' day when we were there, but we did have some fantastic traditional music. But 10 years since you started, not you alone, but your friends mm-hmm. Started a wonderful, well, not brand new, but a younger. There was a younger group of traditional singers coming together there. You called it the night before Larry got stretched after the great song. And many now well-known Irish singers and groups and bands have emerged from that scene. And now people are talking about traditional singing being safe again for at least 3 generations. What is your where are they getting this 3 generations number from? And what is your thought on this word safety? Where are we at?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to speak on the totality of a tradition and where it's going into the future. And, you know, I don't know who could be as confident to say that something will certainly last or will certainly be safe. But there is a lot of that talk going around now. And in a certain sense, I can understand where people are coming from. Effectively, about 12 years ago now, we celebrated our 10th birthday in 2022. Myself and a couple of people who've since gone on to be pretty well known, people like Ian Lynch of Lancome and Ruth Clinton and Sinead Lynch of Landless, all came together and sort of decided that we had all been singing traditional songs very disparate from one another. Like, we knew one another, but we didn't have a meeting place. And
yeah.
We kind of hang around the edge of other older people's sessions. And we kind of said, a little bit naively, that we'd love to have a space of our own. Now, when we said that, there was no ageism involved. It was never that the door would be closed to anybody of an older generation, simply that we would have a place that kind of managed, was run the way we liked, and that we would feel most comfortable in. So Sinead Lynch, who I mentioned, is a member of Landless. She'd been a kind of part-time barmaid in the Cobblestone at the time. And actually, Tom Mulligan, the great kind of hero of Irish music in Dublin, he actually suggested to her that she would start a session and basically said, listen, we have a room at the back there whenever you want it. And since the 2nd of September 2012, we've been running there the first Sunday of every month, barring summertime. And I suppose what's happened in the interim is that there's been an amazing groundswell of singers, young singers, kind of under the age of 40, 35, that kind of thing, who've begun, at least in a formal way, singing these traditional songs. I can't say that we began these people's singing careers. A lot of them were just doing it off on their own or in tune sessions with us, but we created a kind of focal point, and that turned out to be an amazing melting pot for singers. Now, from maybe the third or fourth session, as someone once mentioned, the oldies found us out, and people from the neighbouring sessions, the great neighbouring sessions like the Ongolian traditional singers or the Hoat Singer Circle, they started to come as well. And suddenly what we had was this great intergenerational melting pot for songs. So we could all do it in a space that we were comfortable in, but we could also learn from this older generation. And that's something that I think is absolutely key to its success. You know, these people have trod this road before us, and they've made the inroads, and they've sought out the songs, and they have the experience, and we're just lucky to have learned from them. So Larry is still going strong.
Good.
12 years later, and there's a couple of bands that have come up through that, and if they try to tell you that we didn't teach them everything they know, they're lying.
we'll leave
entirely to us.
Absolutely. We'll leave names out of it. But I'll tell you, you've been over to England a couple of times singing. I saw you at Whitby singing at one of the traditional nights there. I think people are trying here, but the optimism of the comments about the Irish scene now and its secured nature, at least for a while, because of this resurgence, I feel like we're a bit behind the eight ball there. What's your perception of the traditional singing scene here and the connections that we have with Irish trad as well?
Yeah, I mean, I have no sort of eagle-eye view over the session in England, but when I meet young guys like Seb Stone or bands like Goblin Band or people like Mossy Christian, I don't see cause for concern. I see some really, really exciting young people doing it. I mean, I have no sense of the numbers across the country, you know, if these guys are, you know, just diamonds in the rough, I'm not sure. But it seems to me like there's lots of really great young people making really great noises and really taking an interest in the old stuff, which is what we have over here. I mean, I compare and despair, right? I don't exactly know what the value is in pushing one against one another. I mean, we can all do better in this regard, in improving our spaces for young people, in, you know, making sure it's a place that's approachable to a young person and being open to change, I suppose.
Definitely. Well, I think that's a key. I think that's a key. And I think that one of the problems here is not that we don't have young singers. I think it's just that the spaces are not yet right for them. And one of the things I think people should take inspiration from you and your colleagues there at the Cobblestone is the sense that you do, obviously you want to honour your ancestors and you want to honour the songs, but you also want to feel to a certain extent that it's something that you have, you found your space where you do it. And I think that is where we need to improve here in the UK. And I think that collaboration between, like more collaboration, one of the things I love about Ian Lynch is that he understands how valued traditional music is here. And when he comes to England, he gets involved and he takes songs back to Ireland from England and vice versa. And that seems to me to have always been the case. Singers like Luke Kelly. So the next thing we're going to talk about, Dominic Behan, had a rich career in England and was beloved by the BBC. I wonder if you could just comment on that and before we hear Our Last Hope, which I'd love you to introduce for us.
Yeah, well, I suppose Dominic Behan is only one of umpteen singers who effectively had a much larger career in England, Scotland, and Wales than he ever did back home. Mm. But Dominic Behan was an incredible singer, songwriter, journalist, playwright, novelist, a total polymath that came from inner city Dublin, not far from where I grew up. And I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say he's the most celebrated 20th century songwriter. At least in the Irish tradition, he's written so many songs that are so successful people think they're traditional. I mean, it's usually the mark of a great folk songwriter.
As is being ripped off by Bob Dylan.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Christ, the ultimate check mark, right? Dominic was an extremely important cultural figure in his time. He did butt heads with the Ewan McCalls, Bob Dylans, the David Attenboroughs of his time when he was working at BBC. He was really at the center of at least British cultural life at the time, if not Irish cultural life as well, and seemed to make waves across the globe. And he had a bit of a reputation for being cantankerous, and it was more than a reputation. It was the truth. But he left behind some incredible songs, but really so much more than songs. It's just the songs that sort of outlived him the most.
So tell us why you picked this song, Our Last Hope, for your record.
Yeah, well, Our Last Hope, I guess, one of the reasons it struck me so much is because it kind of surprised me the first time I heard it to hear that it was written by Dominic Behan, mostly because Dominic had quite a sort of pig-nosed, punky attitude in most of his political beliefs. There was very little about reconciliation and coming together in his output, though I did know that ultimately he believed in working class solidarity in the north of Ireland over sectarian division. Yeah. And in this song, he just draws on all of the great imagery of that time and of that conflict, and finds these beautiful ways of making peaceful metaphors out of each of them. God save the Queen, God bless the Pope, in your heart with your harps and lambeg drums, as you live in despair and die in hope in your falls and tranquil slums. Just these beautiful metaphors. And it's one of these songs that seems to be one of Dominic's kind of later masterpieces. It didn't feature much in his early repertoire. There are fragments of it around. I think he's something that he worked on for a long time, and perhaps an older Dominic was looking back at his younger, more pugnacious career and wrote something that was a lot more hopeful and I suppose spoke to an Ireland in the future rather than the kind of turmoil it was living in the then present. But for me, it's just a beautiful song and something that is every bit as relevant today as when it was written.
You've heard of Jem, me hope, me friends, and Big Tom Russell too. Both brave and true dissenter men, they died for me and you. So let's call to mind those rare old times, and when we feel alone, remember and rejoice, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. Remember and rejoice, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. No more we'll talk about the Boyne, for now we know the cost. For when James and Billy flipped the coin, 'twas only Ireland lost. Let Jamie dance away to France, let Billy grab the throne, but remember and rejoice, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. Remember Henry Joy, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. God save the Queen, God bless the Pope, with your harps and lambic drums, as you live in despair and die in hope, in your Falls and Shankill slums. Let's pray to God that Pape and Prod may worship each their own. But remember Henry Joy, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. Remember Henry Joy, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. Let's say goodbye, kind friends, at last, to bigotry and hate. Our future's always been the past, not Stormont or Free State. Too long we've been divided, friends, too long we've fought our own. So remember and rejoice, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone. Remember Henry Joy, my friends, Bob Emmett and Wolf Tone.
Our Last Hope, sung by my guest today, McDarrah Yates, from his brand new debut record, Traditional Singing from Dublin. McDarrah, when I was looking through some of your old, not old, but stuff that happened, for example, during lockdown, when a lot of content was made on YouTube and people were doing a lot of their singing sessions virtually because we couldn't get together. After that period, you went up and spent some time at a fascinating, very, very important cultural centre and theatre, Shimsa Tira. And What a fascinating time you had talking to some great, great traditional singers there. I've never seen anything quite like it. The combination of theatre production value, obviously a lot of singers there who cross into art and theatre performance as opposed to sort of social and pub singing. But the quality of the Shan Noss singing, the quality of the singing, and also the interesting use of harmony, not something I've associated with Irish trad before. Tell us about your experiences at Shimsa Tira and what it is and how you got involved.
Yeah, well, I guess there were some really interesting things happening around COVID where the government were announcing different schemes to help people get back to work. And in one particular scheme, Shimsa Tira were able to kind of avail of funding to effectively hire what they were calling associate artists. They wanted to expand their usual palette and the kind of team of people they worked with. And thankfully, they chose me to sort of come down and work somewhat as an artist in residence in a remote capacity, but then also to kind of work with some of the artists there. And one day they just asked if I would be interested in sort of exploring, the singing cast that they have involved in the place. If your listeners don't know, Shimsa Tira is almost like a traditional music stage school.
Yes.
And believe me, it sounds a lot better than that. it is a lot better than it sounds, rather.
Yeah,
is what I should say. But they train young kids up from a very, very young age to sing, dance, play, what have you, ultimately with the goal of producing theatrical productions about Irish music, about the history of County Kerry, where the theatre is located. And today it's a massive family, one that, to be honest, I was completely removed from and didn't have much knowledge of its history until they asked me to do the video. But I just spent, you know, a day meeting their singers, listening to them, and I was really just taken aback by the level of talent they have down there. And as you mentioned, they're sort of, their traditional singing choir that they have down there, which, as you say, isn't something that we associate very richly with the Irish tradition by comparison, say, to the English one. And I spent maybe 6 months working kind of in and out of the centre, helping out on different projects, working on my own projects with them. And it was a really, really rewarding experience. And I should tip my hat to Roisin Magar, who was the sort of artistic director at the time. She got me in there, but it was an experience I'll cherish for sure.
Absolutely, and I found it fascinating. And I'll on our Facebook page, I'll post a link, listeners, to the video that McDarrah made when he was there, because some of the singing will blow you away. And I thought the your interview was great as well. Now, someone I wanted to talk to you about. We can't really talk about your record without mentioning one of your mentors, or I don't know if you knew him personally, but certainly somebody you talk about a lot, and that's the great Dublin singer Liam Weldon. Did you know Liam? I know you know Nelly, but did you know Liam as well?
Sadly, never met Liam. No, he would have died before I came along, but he was. Yeah, just an absolute cultural behemoth who sadly only left just behind about 11 tracks, which he recorded on a record in 1976. But those 11 tracks have gone on to blaze quite a trail. Now, I've through my sort of interest in Liam, I've managed to dig out quite a bit more from various archives and different kind of collaborations that he was involved in. But effectively, Liam was a singer and a bit of a polymath. Also, he kind of dabbled in so many other things and instrument making and shoemaking and gardening and bird fancying.
One thing you said about Liam Weldon, which I found interesting, McDarrah, is that he gave you the confidence to sing in your own voice and to accept your voice, which you hadn't necessarily thought had a place in music. Could you maybe just tell us what you meant by that and how he inspired you?
Yeah, well, I think a lot about this. You know, like I think of the various folk regions, say in our part of the world, you've got Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales. You know, each of them has their own kind of distinct character. And for a long time, I would have believed that the Irish character was one that was a bit more introspective, that people kind of closed their eyes and sang to their shoes almost. Mm. And for someone like me with a big booming voice, you know, that's probably more suitable to the street or something. I often wondered if what I was doing was even appropriate. For years of just listening to different singers and going to these sessions where people would kind of throw their head back a small bit at hearing how loud I would sing, I finally came across Liam Weldon, who seemed to, in part, have a similar outlook to me.
Yeah.
And beyond just what an incredible songwriter and singer he was, and just hearing that and hearing how respected he was and how he would kind of get the same reaction as me back in his day, I said, I must be fine here. There must be a place for me somewhere. If I can glean that confidence from a man who's, you know, at that stage, maybe 20 years dead, I didn't mind.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, people who don't know his work, you say he only left 11 recorded tracks, but two of those were Dark Horse on the Wind and Blue Tar Road. Many of our listeners will know both of those songs. As well as being beautifully written, Blue Tar Road, such empathy for travelling people who he learned so much from. And Dark Horse on the Wind, an incredible, as you say, a polymath, really, because his appreciation of the geopolitical implications of independence are in a song which is in only four verses and poetry. Mm-hmm. Such a keen eye and ear for a tune and a story. Amazing, really.
Yeah, well, because Liam wasn't classically or even conventionally educated at all, he would have left school like many people of his generation at the age of 13 or 14. And then when you listen to his lyrics, which are so rich, not just in imagery, but, you know, just in their really polished kind of literary style, you wouldn't scratch your head a bit and say, how is this man, you know, how has this man produced this incredible work? And it's not to say that people from working class communities haven't been producing beautiful literary works for, you know, generations, for centuries even, but it's just, it's the particular style seems to come from a class that would be perceived to be beyond him. It seems I've had great conversations with Liam's widow or wife, Nelly, and she always harks back to a story that Liam was struggling with different health complications as a child and would be in and out of hospital. And on one occasion when he was maybe 9 years old, he was entered into a poetry competition within the hospital among the children, and he won. And it seemed to just set off this lifelong interest in the written word.
Oh, that's
so by the time he was in his 40s and, you know, making at least one album, he had a lot of writing under his belt, and he was very politically engaged. He campaigned on behalf of travellers, he campaigned against sort of air pollution in Dublin City. He had a lot of empathies and a lot of topics on which to sort of project his gifts, and that has given us at least two beautiful songs in the ones you mentioned, but a couple more as well.
Yeah,
he was a really exceptional fellow who, I guess, the the comment I often make is that he was the dark horse on the wind. He was the person that sort of showed anybody up who doubted him. You know?
Yeah. McDara, my children, Hamish and Harry, haven't stopped talking about seeing you for the first time in Whitby last year when you sang The Cruel Mother, and it made quite an impact on the young lads. You are appearing at Hartlepool, which is not far from here, and it's it's not long away now, in October. Have you been to Hartlepool Folk Festival before?
Never. The closest I've been to Hartlepool is Whitby, but I met many of the great folks who seem to frequent both, so I'm very excited to meet the gang.
Yeah, I'm sure you're going to have a terrific time, and I know that they will love what you're doing and they'll love your record as well. So, people, this is an opportunity soon to see McDara on this side of the pond. I do hope you can get to Hartlepool and see him there. And good luck with your album. Good luck with the performances. I know that I really enjoyed the story about having to convince the committee to let you launch it at Larry. Very good indeed. Will you, in fact, be facing the wall, or do you think you might chance turning into the room?
Oh, Lord knows, Lord knows. They might have eased up on me by then.
Well, it's been lovely to have you on the program. And I have chosen, I think at the moment, my favourite cut from the record, which is Learn from Liam Weldon. It's One Starry Night. Is there anything you'd like to say about this, or shall we just hear it?
What I say about this is that Liam, it's what it says in the sleeve notes of the record, he learned his singing, at least according to him, from two main sources. One was the street singers who used to sing on the street corners around Dublin where he grew up. And the other were from the travellers who camped in his grandmother, Granny Weldon's back garden on Hanbury Lane. And Liam, as a young boy, would sneak out to the back garden to hear these women sing while they were doing their washing. And this is a song he got from a travelling woman named Mary Duke.
Thanks for your time today, and good luck with everything, McDara. It's been lovely to have you on the program.
Thank you, James.
One starry night, as I lay sleeping, one starry night, I lay in my bed. I dreamt I heard wagon wheels a-creaking, and when I awoke, my own love had fled. I'll search the highways, I'll search the byways, I'll search the boring and camping places too, and I will inquire, not from our people, have they tide or tiding or signs of you? Many is the mile you I have traveled, many is the hour, Lord, with you I've spent. And I thought you were my love forever, but now I find, Lord, we're only lent. I'm drunk today, love, but of times I am sober, a constant rover from town to town. And when I am dead, love, and my trouble's over, Molly Bond, the story, won't you lay me down? Many is the mile, love, with you I have traveled. with you I've spent. And I thought you were my love forever, but now I find love you are only lent.
Compelling, heartfelt, passionate, sung with love and joy and knowledge. What more can you ask from a traditional singer? McDarrah, thank you for joining us. I think the album's beautiful and I think everybody should get a copy. You can get it from McDarrah Yates's website. You can get it from Bandcamp. And you can buy a vinyl copy. I think there's still some left if you want to. Or you could buy a CD if you still have one of those machines in your house or your car. Well, we've been wading our way through the Robin Hood ballads, and as part of Friday's Child, our attempt to play a recorded version of almost every child ballad in the great child ballad collection. We are up to child ballad 140, and I've got brilliant news for you. This week, it's an absolute stormer, partly because it actually has a decent tune recorded, written down by Gardner and and published by Vaughan Williams, and it was sung by a Mrs. Goodyear of Axford near Basingstoke in Hampshire in January 1909. The ballad is called Robin Hood and the Three Squires, also known as Robin Hood Rescuing the Three Squires. And I'm going to play you a little snippet of the first recording that I found of it, which is by a group some of you will know of called the Songwainers. They recorded an album of the same title, the Songwainers, in 1971, and they opened their album with Child Ballad 140, Robin Hood and the Three Squires. And then we'll go straight into a magnificent version by the one and only John Kirkpatrick, who gives this absolutely everything. I think this is a magnificent arrangement of this ballad, and it's from a Fellside recording called Ballads. John Kirkpatrick at his best with this week's Child Ballad 140.
Friday's Child.
Friday's Child, that's me.
A child ballad every Friday.
There are 12 months in all the year, as I hear many men say. But the merriest month in all the year, it is the month of May. Now Robin Hood is to Nottingham gone, with a Lincoln, a Down and a Tay. Until he's met with a fair lady, was a weeping all on the highway.
I'll tell you the story of bold Robin Hood. Through the forest around ranged he, and the first that he met was a gay lady, a-weeping all on the highway. Oh, why do you weep, gay lady, he said. Oh, why do you weep, said he. Oh, why do you weep, said bold Robin Hood. I pray thee come tell unto me. Oh, do you weep for gold, he said, or do you weep for fee? Or do you weep for your sweet maidenhead that some villain has stolen from thee? Oh, I don't weep for gold, she said, nor do I weep for fee. Nor do I weep for me sweet maidenhead, for no villain has stole it from me. But I do weep this lady, she said, and bitterly she did cry. Oh, I do weep for my three sons, for they are condemned to die. What church have they plundered, said bold Robin Hood, or what parish priest have they slain? Or have they forced maidens against their will, or with other men's wives have they lain? Oh, no church have they plundered, this lady, she said, nor no parish priest have they slain. Nor have they forced maidens against their will, nor with other men's wives have they lain. But this they have done, the lady, she said, that they are condemned to die. They've stolen 16 of the king's royal deer, and for that to be hanged on high. Oh, go your way home, gay my lady, he said. Go your way home, said he. Oh, go your way home, said bold Robin Hood. Tomorrow I set them free. Oh, my scarf, for a favour, pray wear it, she said. For a fine gallant knight such as thee. You do me great honour, my champion, to ride for me and my sons all three. Oh, your favour, I'll wear it, said bold Robin Hood. But truly, 'tis you honour me. For I am no knight, gay lady, he said, but gladly your champion I'll be. So bold Robin Hood, he was galloping along, 'twas in the best part of the day, when there he did meet with an old beggar man, come begging all on the highway. Oh, what news, oh father, he said, what news, pray tell unto me. Oh, there's weeping and wailing in Nottingham town, and it's all for the squires all three. Now the beggar man had an old coat on his back, nor green, nor yellow, nor red. And thinks bold Robin Hood, 'twould serve him full well to be in this beggar man's stead. Oh, come change your apparel, old father, he said, come change your apparel with mine. And here's 20 good shillings to drink your own health in merry good ale and wine. Oh, you are apparelled in clothing so fine, mine is all ragged and torn. But still it's not fitting a young man like you should laugh an old man to scorn. Oh, no scorn do I give thee, said bold Robin Hood, I swear by Our Lady. The tales will be told of your beggar man's coat, if a beggar man you'll let me be. So they changed their apparel, they changed all their clothes, till each wore the other's attire. And as much like a beggar did Robin Hood look, as the beggar man looked like a squire. For the beggar man's hat did Robin have on, that stood full high at the crown. Sure no one will know me, said bold Robin Hood, in the whole of fair Nottingham town. And the beggar man's breeches did Robin have on, with patches from ball up to side. By the breath of my body, said bold Robin Hood, I never wore so little pride. And the beggar man's coat did Robin have on, 'twas worn right through to the skin. Though I shake and I shiver, said bold Robin Hood, there's pockets aplenty within. There's a pocket for meal, a pocket for malt, and a pocket for barley and corn, and one pocket more to make up the score, and that's for my bugle horn. So bold Robin Hood to Nottingham came, to Nottingham town came he. And the sheriff did meet, and him he did greet, likewise the squires all three. Oh, save you, high sheriff, he said, and I beg you all down on one knee. That as for the death of these three squires, the hangman I might be. Soon granted, the high sheriff said, soon granted unto thee. And you shall have all of their clothing so fine, and their money to be your fee. Oh, I want none of their clothing so fine, nor their money to be my fee. But all I desire is to blast on my horn, that their souls to heaven may flee. So Robin climbed up to the gallows so high, when skipping from stock to stone. By the faith of my body, the high sheriff said, you're nimble for an old beggar man. Oh, look well on this old beggar man. Look well, high sheriff, said he. The tales will be told of this beggar man's coat, with his patches and pockets are three. I've a pocket for meal, a pocket for malt, and a pocket for barley and corn, and one pocket more to make up the score, and that's for my bugle horn. Oh, blow then, blow, the high sheriff said, blow and have no doubt. I would have you blow well, such a mighty fine blast, you'd blow both your blessed eyes out. So Robin blew once,
Robin blew twice and Robin blew three times shrill, till 110 of Robin Hood's men came running all down the green hill. What men are those? The high sheriff said. What men are all those? Said he. Oh, they're all of them mine and none of them thine, and they've come for the squires all three. Oh, take them, the high sheriff said, and a curse on your bugle that blows, and curse every pocket in your beggar man's cloak, and curse you and your beggar man's clothes. Then bold Robin Hood, he shot a fat buck, little John, he shot a fat doe, and they are away to the merry green wood with the three squires all in a row, a row. The three squires all in a row.
Stupendous from John Kirkpatrick. Thank you very much for joining us for this week's Thank Goodness It's Folk. I've been James Fagan, and you heard Sam Hindley in the first hour. The whole program's available from our Mixcloud page. Just look up Thank Goodness It's Folk and join us next week at 10 a.m. on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM or however you like to listen to the program. McDarrah Yates, thank you so much for joining us. One of the recommendations from McDarrah was a group of women who sing in Dublin. They are Lily Power, Maeve Meyer, Ruth Clinton and Sinead Lynch, and they formed in 2013 and called their band Landless. The album is wonderful and it's called Lurach. And from it, here is the very spooky song Death and the Lady, sung brilliantly here in harmony by this wonderful group, Landless. See you next week.
As they went out one day,